listening to the AHDB podcast, farming news and stories from across the UK. In this month's pork-focused episode, we'll be focusing on pig welfare and looking at what DEFRA's updated code of recommendations for the welfare of livestock means in practice for pig keepers. We'll also be hearing about some of the key highlights from last month's meetings for small-scale pig keepers and finish with a quick look at the Chinese pig market. But first, today I'm here with Claire Barber. Claire, would you mind introducing yourself and telling listeners about your role here at AHDB?
Yeah, my role here is as a welfare officer for pork, and I've been at AHDB for approximately about 3 years.
And what are your kind of key activities and projects?
My main responsibility is to look after anything regarding pig welfare, but particularly to look at the Real Welfare Scheme, which is a series of welfare assessment outcomes, and that's quite a large-scale project for us at AHDB, and also to do other projects in the welfare code consultations and other projects that relate to welfare and anything that can advise pig keepers how best to keep their pigs.
Okay, and we're going to talk about a couple of those things now. So firstly, I'm going to refer to it as the Welfare Code. It's a bit of a mouthful otherwise, so we'll call it the Welfare Code from now on. Could you just explain to listeners, what is the Welfare Code that DEFRA has?
The Welfare Code is basically a set of recommendations and best practice, and it also sets out the legislation that pig keepers have to adhere to. It was last published in 2003, and so we have a new version that is updating all of those requirements. And it is a document that pig keepers are required by law to actually have a copy on their farm and to make themselves aware of and au fait with.
Okay, so that was published some time ago. We're now looking at a new version. Could you just bring us up to speed about what's been happening over the last few months or year or so?
Yeah, it's been quite a journey. The AHDB have been quite in the middle of trying to get these new codes brought into practice. And there's been a lot of consultations that we've been doing with DEFRA, APHA, and a number of other organisations like CIWF and the RSPCA and Pig Veterinary Society in order to make sure that we've got the best codes for pig producers. So they are a lot more in-depth than they have been, but hopefully they shouldn't be too onerous because we've done a lot of work with other societies to try and focus on them actually being not just aspirational, but practical too.
Okay, and realistic for farmers to achieve.
Absolutely.
Okay, so when are they looking to be published? Because at the moment, I believe they're still in the draft stage. Final draft stage, maybe.
That's right. We refer to them as draft codes, and that means that they have actually gone before Parliament, but they have to remain before Parliament for 40 days. But that's 40 days of sitting, and they did this in September. So we don't have an exact date for when these will come into force, and it's quite important to stress right now that these new codes, although people can view them, they're not actually in force yet. But they will be coming into force, hopefully, in early 2020.
Okay. And what are the key changes and what do farmers really need to kind of take on board or start thinking about, preparing for maybe? What differs from the last version to this new updated code?
Well, I think the first thing that people will notice when they see the new code is that it's a lot weightier than it was before. We've gone from 35 pages up to 60 plus. So it is a more substantial document. And whilst this continues to detail the legislation, which on the face of it, a lot of people will think hasn't changed too much, what is in this new code is an awful lot more recommendations for best practice and detailing how there may be some changes to how existing legislation is now going to be interpreted.
Okay.
So some of the key changes that we've got in this code is essentially things like a lot more information on enrichment. So there's a lot more detail there about the types of enrichment that could be used, the kind of situations and for what types of pigs. Obviously, it is legislation that pigs should have access to enrichment at all times. It goes on to explain a little bit more about recording, and that's quite a key thing in the new code, is a lot more requirement for producers to start keeping detailed records of a number of things. One of those is tail biting instances. There will become a lot more emphasis for producers to start recording things like the lighting conditions within their units, as well as other things that go on the unit that can be a factor for tail biting. So if things are left open, doors or ventilation problems, those are expected to be recorded, and whether there is any action then taken on to put those right. Okay. And whether there's any tail biting instances that can be then related to those problems and what was done to try and alleviate that. So there's going to be a lot more emphasis on people recording things regarding tail biting. And we hope that to try and help producers with this additional recording requirements, they might be able to go to our Tail Biting WebHat website, which has a risk assessment and some action plans and some data sheets that they could use in order to try and record this additional information.
Exactly. And so for listeners not familiar, the WebHAT stands for the Husbandry Advisory Tool, which you can access online, and you can print off reports tailored specifically to your situation.
Absolutely. It is basically a risk assessment tool. So don't be put off by the husbandry advisory part. It's a risk assessment tool, and it enables people to record the kind of actions that they've taken against the risks that they've managed to highlight and assess that they have on their unit.
And we'll include a link in the show notes today for anyone interested in having a look at that.
But other things in there regarding record keeping are very much regarding the things like health plans and welfare plans, and also contingency planning becomes a big thing in this new code. Producers are going to have to be showing that they have shown foresight into how they might approach possible problems like flooding or a problem with feed or things like that, and actually have that recorded, that this would be what they would aim to do.
And that's new for this
That's
this
new
version.
For this code, yeah. Mm-hmm. It doesn't appear in the previous 2003 codes. One of the other main points that is very interesting is that DEFRA have included in a section of the code their intention to start to aim for farrowing crates to no longer be used. Now, it doesn't actually state any timeline or anything, or that it's going to become illegal for farrowing crates to be used. It simply states that they want to work towards farrowing environments not requiring crates, and then goes on to explain quite a bit about the kind of ways in which farrowing crates could be used in different systems.
So maybe looking more like at the free farrowing sort of pig safe systems.
Exactly. It could be those, or even looking at systems with temporary crating instead. So it's very much saying this is the direction that we wish to travel in without making a particularly firm commitment or a designated commitment to weed all these systems out.
So maybe if anyone's thinking about putting new farrowing accommodation up or building some new accommodation, it's something they should perhaps have a think about and bear in mind.
Absolutely. This is very key, that if there is new farrowing accommodation being planned or built, it may be that in future somebody who chooses to put in a farrowing crate system may have to justify why they chose that over other systems in a new house, as opposed to what they have. So we're very much asking people that if they're planning new accommodation, they give some thought to whether they want to use farrowing crates or they could use other systems.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's good advice for people to take on board. Was there anything else specific that kind of stands out from the new welfare code that we should highlight?
Those are the key points. I did mention about recording and lighting recording. Using a light meter is something that is quite new in the code as well. And that might require some of our producers needing to go out and purchase a lux meter for that recording. And also being able to make themselves a fay with how you actually record lighting in a pig house. So that's something that is a completely new requirement.
And do these things apply to all producers, whether you've got sort of two or three pigs all the way up to 1,000? It's the same for all?
It is. The welfare code applies just as much to somebody with a pet pig or even somebody as a small-scale producer right through to the larger scale units. So anybody with a pet pig or small-scale production, they would be still expected to have a copy of the code and still be able to know what's in there and make themselves a fay with the legislation and these new requirements.
Okay, good to know. Yep. So if we now move on from the welfare code, I'm going to quickly have a little chat about real welfare, because then there's some sort of updates coming through on that. Could you just give listeners a bit of a rundown or overview about what the Real Welfare Programme is?
Yep, the Real Welfare Programme is a scheme which records welfare outcomes for the pigs. We have a set of outcomes, which are a set of five. It's lameness, pigs that should be in a hospital pen, body marks, tail damage, and also the use of enrichment in the pig pen. So these five factors are monitored on farms, and it's actually, if your red tractor are assured, these will be something that is required with part of your farm assurance. So your vet will be required to do these for you. The essential aspects of this is that it's to try and help improve pig welfare by alerting producers and vets to any potential problems that might occur, and then actually having those recorded in your health plans for how you're going to try and achieve or change those. And the scheme has been running for the past 5 years.
Okay, so the changes. At the moment, I gather the reports from the Rural Welfare Scheme are accessible to vets, but going forward, that's going to change slightly. Could you just tell us about that?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, at the moment, the way this works in terms of getting your results from your Rural Welfare Assessment is that your vet will talk to you and detail the scores that you've obtained and what you might do about them. We want that to change so that the producer also has copies of that rather than just your vet printing it out. It also puts less onus on the vet to do that printing or varying of the information. If you have a Pig Hub login account, then you will, by the end of November, hopefully, be able to also access your Rural Welfare Assessment documents as well for your most recent visits. And we're hoping that this will enable people to have a look at their scores and then actually open up that dialogue with the vet. If the vet hasn't actually done it with you already, you could say, I've got this score, what would be your advice for achieving a lower score next time? What can I work on? Or it would enable you to see where your unit scores against the national average for those scores quite anonymously against other units. So you would know whether you're in the lower 10 or 25% or the highest 10% for that particular parameter, and know where you sit with your unit and how you're doing.
Okay, that's answered some of the questions that I was going to ask. So what are the other benefits to producers of being able to access the reports and kind of see how their farm's performing? What are you hoping for producers to do or act on?
Well, we hope that they'd act on any of these that have a particularly high score and do something to try and reduce that for their next visit. And we have data that shows from the scheme so far that that is actually happening already with the vet, but we're just hoping that this will happen in an easier way if both parties have access to the report. We also, because we feel that this is data that belongs to the producer, so they should have direct access to that data and not just have to ask for it either through AHDB or through their vet. We're trying to give it to them directly. And the other factor that could come into play is that we're aware that one or two assurance schemes through retailers, for example, may have assessors going out and occasionally asking producers for evidence of them having had a real welfare assessment. And so being able to access the report themselves, a producer wouldn't have to go to their vet and ask for it. They would be able to provide that proof to any form of assessor or inspector asking about a real welfare assessment.
Okay, that sounds really good. So you say that's hopefully going to come into force from end of November-ish, all being well?
Yeah. We're working on it at the moment. It's in the latter stages, but there's a few little tweaks just to finalise so that it makes as much sense and is as smooth as possible. Yeah. But yes, yeah, so we're hoping for the end of November.
And we'll promote that online and in our Pork Weekly newsletter to let people know once that's available. Yeah. Okay, well, thanks very much for your time today, Claire. It was really interesting and hopefully listeners got a lot from it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Before we wrap up, Lucia Gregson has joined me to tell us how last month's meeting for small-scale pig keepers went and what some of the highlights were. For a more in-depth look at this topic, I'd recommend having a listen to the episode we recorded back in September, where we went into much more detail. I'll include a link in the show notes today in case you want to go back and have a listen. Thanks for joining me, Lucia. For any listeners who aren't aware of the activity and who perhaps haven't already listened to the September episode, could you just give us a quick recap about the meetings that were held last month?
So these small-scale producer meetings are run twice a year and we cover various relevant topics. So things like disease surveillance, even things like farrowing, anything that's relevant to small-scale producers and something that can also help the commercial producers as well.
Okay, so this round of events, what was the main topic?
So the main topic for this event was disease surveillance. in which we have veterinary investigation officers from the Animal and Plant Health Agency come along, and they did a presentation for us on various different diseases that are relevant for industry right now. So things like African swine fever, swine dysentery, and then a few other diseases that were a little bit more relevant to small-scale producers.
And how many people came along to the meetings this time around?
Overall, 5. We roughly got about 150 overall.
That's brilliant. Because we launched a new one this summer, didn't we? And Leicester and Lancashire and York was like their second meeting.
Yeah.
So it seems to be quite popular and we've got good numbers there. So what were the key messages that people were able to take away from these meetings? Were there things they could go away and apply to their own farms or small holdings?
The biggest thing was biosecurity and almost going back to basics. So there was a really nice story that APHA told about a farmer in Georgia. And obviously Georgia was where African swine fever was hit first in Europe. And in a small village, only one farmer and his pigs weren't infected. And it was down to the fact that he and his wife were the only people to enter the pigs. They didn't swill feed and they always changed boots and clothing before going in with the pigs. And it was as simple as that to say, just simple things, changing your boots. If you've got visitors coming on, make sure you've got spare pairs of wellies. If not, use things like foot covers. And just reminding the basics like foot dips if they've got them. So it's just small little things that make the world a difference.
Okay, so it's just really keeping on top of your biosecurity.
Yeah.
And remembering that every little thing helps and it doesn't take much for a disease to get in.
No, and if someone does suspect that they've got a disease, the best thing to do is contact the vet as soon as possible and call their local APHA office.
The APHA also offer a free service, so if anyone suspects they may have porcine epidemic diarrhea or PED, that they can get that tested for free?
Yes, they can. So if you go onto the APHA website and have a look on there, you can get some samples sent off if you are a suspected case. And on the APHA website as well, there's also a lot of other fact sheets that you can go on. So this covers a range of things from Salmonella, ASF. So have a look on those. Quite a lot of useful fact sheets.
Great.
Okay, and what's the any messages that kind of apply both to the small scale and the larger keepers?
I think it was, again, it's just the biosecurity aspect of to really keep on top of it. And for our commercial producers, it's a particular focus on lorries and making sure that any vehicles are entering the farm, that they are clean. Make sure lorry drivers are wearing foot covers or that they have the overalls from your farm and wellies as well.
Yeah.
Thanks for the update, Lucia. And finally, this will be your last podcast with AHDB as you're moving on to Pastures New. Would you be able to just tell listeners where you're heading to and who their point of contact will be at AHDB for anything relating to small-scale pig keeping?
Yeah, so I am actually moving to Tulip Foods, part of the BPP pigs. So I'm going to be a new breed assurance / field person. And our new point of contact for small scale pig producers is Emily Boyce. So a few of you might know Emily because she attended the Exeter and Horsham meetings. So Emily will be.
Thanks, Richard, and all the best for your new job.
Thank you.
Before we sign off for today's episode, we're going to hear from Felicity Rusk, one of our analysts. African swine fever has been decimating China's pig herd for over a year now. And with China now in a protein deficit, Felicity is going to take a look at where the world's largest consumer of pork is importing its pig meat from.
Hello and welcome to the November edition of Pork Talk. African swine fever has been decimating China's pig herd for over a year now. The latest estimates show that the Chinese pig herd was nearly 30% smaller in August than in the year before. With China now in a protein deficit, imports of pork in the year to September have increased by nearly 45% compared to last year. It goes without saying that China won't replace all of its lost pork production with imports. Domestic production of poultry and fish is increasing, and imports of all meats are higher. But having said that, where has China been importing its pig meat from? The EU is the largest exporter of pig meat to China and has been able to capitalise on the increase in demand. Exports of pig meat in the year to August have increased by nearly 40% on the year. The UK has also been able to reap some of the benefits, with shipments to China up nearly 60% on the year. Growth in the EU production is expected to be fairly marginal next year due to a shrinking pig herd, which could limit potential export growth. However, falling domestic consumption could compensate somewhat for this. As a result of the ongoing trade tensions between the US and China, US pork is now subject to an import tariff of up to 72.5%. However, Chinese pig prices have firmed to the extent that some US product is now price competitive, even with the tariffs in place. As such, shipments of US pig meat to China in August were 5 times higher than in the previous year. Additionally, last month the Chinese government announced that it would allow a set volume of US pork to enter the country without the additional tariffs. However, it is unclear what this volume is and when it would be able to enter the nation. Nevertheless, the US is in a favourable position to increase its pig meat exports. Brazil has also been able to capitalise on the increase in demand. Exports of pig meat to China have increased by nearly a third on the year to September. However, Chinese authorities have only approved a handful of plants to export pork products, which could limit export growth. With such a growing reliance on imports, the Chinese government have made recovering domestic production a priority. According to some reports, local authorities have been encouraged to speed up the permitting process, reduce interest rates, and relax environmental regulations to aid expansion. Additionally, the central government has announced subsidies and loans available for expansion of large-scale pig farms. However, Chinese pork consumption is still expected to fall by over 20% in 2020. Consumers initially turned away from pork due to disease concern, despite ASF posing no threat to human health. More recently, rising prices may be increasingly a barrier to purchase. To keep up to date with the latest news in pork markets, please visit the prices and stats section of the AHDB Pork website or subscribe to our Pork Weekly newsletter.
If you've got ideas
for future shows
or thoughts
on episodes you've listened to, tell us what you think
using our short online form, which you can find on our podcast page or in the episode show notes.